It's the next edition of the Europe in Sync podcast, and we're joined by a very special guest today from Zwei Music. It's Simon Heger. Hello, Simon. How are you doing?
I'm great.
What is Zwei? To me, it looks a bit like a part musician, part brand, part agency. Can you explain in a bit more detail exactly what Zwei is?
Yes, it's everything and none of these, basically. For us, it was just a way of composing music for media. So Christian, my partner, and I, we know each other from college, and we decided really early, like 16 years ago, that eventually want to have our own company, our own music brand, so to speak. We were both composers and we're like, hey, let's just do music together. I had a big network of advertising people that I knew, and we started making music for ads at the beginning. Christian was doing a lot of blockbuster movies. Why not dip our toes into the trailer world, which is basically the same sound set? So we partnered up with a label from LA. They're called Position Music, and they released our epic music tracks as an artist. Our first album was mostly instrumental, and we did that in the spare time where we didn't do music for advertising. Then our music landed on big films. Like, the first one was Wonder Woman, and then it grew up to be kind of successful in that world. All of a sudden, people listened to our music on Spotify. So now we had this Spotify profile, but we were these guys sitting in the studio. We became artists by just getting our music heard by a lot of people. So I guess we started as a composer team, grew into a music house, and are also now an epic music artist, so to speak. We also are a record label now, and we also are gonna go live, so a touring artist next year, actually.
Oh, wow, okay.
A lot of things happening.
Is this unusual in this kind of business to have all these elements so close together, so in-house?
Yeah, it's very unusual. Usually our competition in advertising music usually only does custom music for ads. And then we have other labels or sync labels who only create production music for trailers. And then, there, of course, there are bands like Imagine Dragons or the likes who do beautiful big music but are like touring artists. So we kind of stumbled upon all these different worlds without knowing where we were going, but we just go with the flow.
How much of this is by design and how much of it has been by accident, would you say?
That's a good question.
Do you ever think about it? Maybe not.
Well, we know that it's unusual, but we just go where the opportunities are. We're getting bored quite fast and we want to create and find new territories. So, for instance, the way how we stumbled upon being a label, we were like, hey, we create so much epic music that's working so well on trailers and Netflix shows and advertising. Why not try to do the same thing with different genres as well? Like, why not try to do it with R&B or with hip hop or with pop? We're not only two people anymore. We have 10 people on staff right now. Most of them are composers or producers, and the composers, all of them have specific way of working, different styles of genres they want to do. One of our first team members, his name is Abbott, or his artist name is Abbott. He loved doing neoclassical music. So we were like, hey, why not try to bring this into the sync world as well? So we go where we feel it feels right. And same as I earlier mentioned with life, we've been thinking about doing it, and now an opportunity came up and we're like going for it.
That's great to hear. That's much more of a DIY approach, almost like a punk rock ethic, really. You do work on a lot of corporate projects. So
yes,
it's interesting to hear what kind of identity you think you have in the industry and whether this kind of DIY punk kind of attitude, if that's what it is, whether that helps you or whether you found that difficult approaching some of the bigger corporate minded projects.
For us, the most difficult thing is explaining who and what we really are, and that's still a struggle, and we're gonna change a little bit. We're gonna open kind of a new brand just for the custom world. It's the same people behind it, but it's just a little more clear. If people check out our epic music covers on Spotify and then go on our Instagram and listen to a ukulele song for a McDonald's commercial, it's not very linear for the brand or for us as artists. So we're trying to separate it a little bit. But most of all, for us, it's important to create a creative community, maybe a global creative community of creative musicians that can make a living off their art. And with that mindset, everything is possible and everything falls under one roof, even the little ukulele jingle, because if we don't make that money from these McDonald's commercials. We couldn't afford pushing these other artists, creating music videos, making promotion for them. So it all really comes together in the end, which is quite beautiful for us.
There are some projects that you do because of the money they bring in, so that you can work on projects that are perhaps more artistically closer to your heart.
Yeah, that's technically right. I have to say, I love advertising music as well. Every day is new. You can create a polka the one day, a classical piece the next day, and a pop song the other day. We talk a lot about purpose and why we do what we do. And sometimes creating music for brands that don't really represent our values seem a little bit off. But if we take their money, so to speak, and create something beautiful of it, like creating a creative community, people who love making music, they want to make music all the time. And we try to give them that opportunity. Not completely selfless, of course. We also benefit if they are successful, but it's kind of like a win-win situation. And that feels good for us and also serves our purpose.
Europe in Sync is focusing a lot on diversity and sustainability. How do you feel about that? Are there brands that you've refused to work with, or do you question every project that comes in, keeping in mind what that brand is well known for, or something that might not fit you ethically, not just artistically?
That's a very good question, and we actually think about that a lot. If we would stop working for brands who potentially are bad for the environment, we couldn't work anymore, because every car commercial, every airplane commercial, every fast food commercial would be gone. We do have our values, and we do refuse to work for political parties and for anything that's directly connected to hurting animals or anything like that. We don't do music for smoking commercials either. I remember that we refused a huge, huge project once that was for the chicken lobby, who basically wanted the allowance to put even more chicken in their little huts, which is horrible. And we said, no, we can't do that. And that's against our values. And we're glad we didn't do it. But then on the same hand, we do make music for McDonald's, as I mentioned, or Burger King. So we sometimes have to balance it out a little bit and sometimes, you know, swallow the hard pill for the greater good, which is serving our purpose of creating a creative community.
Zwei is highly successful at having your music placed across the board in so many different ways. How much of the work by now do you have to go out looking for and pitching for, versus how often do the clients come to you with a particular project that you can just say yes or no to?
We have to distinguish the different areas of where we work. There's music for Hollywood trailers, there's music for game trailers, whole different industry, and then there's music for advertising. Advertising is definitely a people's business. My role and the role of two of our managers who actively go out on events, to go to parties, we throw parties to network, to socialize, to get to know the people. So where we're really doing networking and going out, it's mostly in advertising. For game trailers, we are lucky enough to not doing any marketing at all. We did one big Hollywood trailer. It was a cover of Survivor from Destiny's Child, and that opened us a lot of doors in the gaming industry. And EA approached us, I think, 3 or 4 years ago and asked us if we want to do music for a game trailer. We said yes. And from that trailer, we went to the full Battlefield campaign with over 15 trailers now in the last 2 years, to Need for Speed, to Apex, to FIFA, then Ubisoft approached us, Activision approached us, and then eventually Riot Games, one of our biggest clients, now approached us as well. And the only thing we have to do is creating badass music. But we are very fortunate not doing any active socializing or any active marketing for that.
You've become the go-to guys in these particular areas, particularly gaming then.
Yeah, I'd like to say so. I mean, game trailers is mainly, we don't do so much in-game music. I want to say we are known for creating gaming epic covers, tracks that are already known, and we just make like a big orchestral underscore under it. In advertising, the advertisers here in Germany, some of them don't know that we do all these game trailers or Hollywood trailers. They just know us from a party and they're like, oh yeah, Simon was a nice guy, maybe he can do music for us. So it's kind of interesting that it's such different worlds and they don't really overlap so much.
Right. That's one of the key points. What we're trying to do with this podcast is look at what those gaps are and why these gaps even exist. And if they didn't exist, would that make life and work easier for everybody? Do you like it that they're separated? I guess so. It's a different hat each time.
in early 2020, when advertising stopped filming and everybody was like a little scared, we were really fortunate because gaming exploded. I guess everybody was sitting at home playing computer games. Also, the development, you didn't need to be in an office. You could do it from home. In that part, we were really fortunate that it didn't overlap. We had our most successful business years when Corona happened because gaming exploded so much. I love the process of making music for game trailers. It's very, very nice. The budgets are great. The recognition is great. The timings are great. In advertising, it's a different animal. It's usually the opposite of all of that. The budget is decent as well, I have to say that. Usually the deadlines are very, very tough, just 1 or 2 days. And also the recognition isn't as big, as I said. Like, people listen to our trailer music on Spotify, but nobody cares to listen to the ukulele song we did for McDonald's. So I wish the advertisers could get some more tips or advice from the gaming industry concerning timings mainly. But it's just what it is. And we're just happy that we don't depend on one entertainment world.
It is what it is. But where would you like to see it improve?
In advertising, I have a lot of things where I think it could go better. One problem that every musician who makes music for ads has is the problem of sound alikes, which means a creative director, a client comes up with a commercial for a skincare brand. It's a 30-second commercial. And in the edit, they have the idea of, hey, let's put a Coldplay song underneath. Everybody loves it. Of course, such a great song, whatever it is. And people really want to have it. And then when it comes to budget, Coldplay usually says, well, if you want our song for this skincare commercial, you got to pay $1 million or something like that. And then the advertisers are like freaking out because they don't have that kind of money. And then they usually go to custom music houses like Zwei and say, hey, could you do something similar? Could you create a sound alike that sound exactly the same but doesn't infringe any copyright and is much cheaper? And that's usually a really big pain in the ass because we don't help anyone with that. Like, the clients are not happy because we can't just do that song. We are not happy because it doesn't give us the creativity that we want. So nobody really is helped. The way to not do that is to be really early in the music process when it comes to ads, to actually help the editors out before they find another Coldplay song, but really give them music out of our own library, tracks that we've already done, maybe compose something really early where all the people who make the decision makers are part. Like, if we can show our music briefing to the client, to the creative director, to the director, and have them all sign off on it, we would have a lot of problems less, and we wouldn't have the problem of creating sound alikes all the time, but could actually be creative.
It's an obvious question, but why wouldn't the advertising company know or have some idea that a Coldplay track is going to cost that kind of money?
Yeah, it's sometimes they just don't know. Sometimes they think, well, it might be a little more expensive than a music house, but let's go for it. Sometimes the creative director really just wants to sell the spot to the client and is pulling all the strings and doesn't care about the consequences. Or the editor doesn't have any alternatives in when he's cutting the spot and throwing stuff underneath, so he has anything because the music wasn't talked about. So there can be all kinds of reasons.
Do you think it's an indication that the music element is actually undervalued in the process?
Very
is it
much,
that, oh, yeah. that any oh, music yeah. will do in the
exactly.
end?
Exactly. Yeah.
You
yeah.
know, as the composer, you probably see the music as the key element. The thing.
Well,
that...
not only the composer should see it as the key element.
Right,
I mean,
right.
It's proven that music takes over 50% of the emotions you feel when you watch a movie or watch any media. It's a big struggle that it's constantly undervalued and always comes last when everything else is cared for. You know what the models look like. You know what voiceover artist you have. But then at some point it's like, oh yeah, we need music. Let's just either create anything or even grab a library and find a cheap track, which is the most horrible thing, of course.
Do you see yourself sometimes as a problem solver or a troubleshooter that's brought in at the wrong time to put errors right?
Happens quite a lot. There are a few clients who are trying to a little, you know, educate every time and saying, hey, it would make more sense. It would be cheaper for you as a client to bring us in the process earlier, to have like a clear briefing that's signed off on from everyone. but there are new creatives, new people who want to prove themselves. There's a lot of ego in advertising. So it's kind of like a fight against windmills. But we accept that we do go against it by creating our own music library, so to speak, where we have tracks that weren't used in advertising, but still are great tracks. I mean, when we compose music for an ad, we usually give the client a couple of options, like 4 or 5 tracks, and only one track can make the race, and the other tracks aren't less good. They are just not the taste of the client. So we have a great way of putting them into an archive and meta tagging them, having all the single tracks, stems of them, and then eventually being able to pitch them again and then be flexible with it. Because if the editor says, okay, I need any tracks, why don't you just take tracks that we've already done that aren't bad, they're just not used yet, and we can do whatever we want with it. Whatever client says, okay, I love the track, but I want a female instead of a male voice, we could do that in a heartbeat. So that's our approach of showing them, hey, there's different ways than constantly getting asked to do soundalikes.
One of the founders of the European Sync Project, Marcus Linder, he talked in a podcast I did with him about the concept of educating the client. Mm. It sounds very patronizing when you just say it, but as you're saying there, you're kind of proving that kind of is needed. It needs as many of the people involved in the project to come together with a common goal to kind of go to the client and explain.
That. Yeah, I'd love that. I mean, that's...
How does that happen? How's it going to work?
It's a thin line between helping them, explaining, and patronizing. You're very right, especially to the creative people who usually have strong opinions. But you can be gentle. And we thought about that quite a lot, to give like little music workshops where we talk about all kinds of stuff, like just giving them ideas of what kind of instruments they are. There's not only guitar and piano. There's so much other music. Or if you want to describe a track, there are more adjectives than cool and modern. Because what does that mean? Everybody has a different meaning, a different understanding of cool. Is it sexy? Is it uplifting? Is it dark? Is it energetic? Just giving them the words to describe music would definitely help. But yeah.
When Oasis became a very big band globally, I guess, every record company went out and tried to sign a version of Oasis. Is there a similar kind of thing in any of the areas you work in gaming, TV and movies, where that happens as well, where there's been some successful campaign and then everybody wants to replicate a version? Does that happen too much?
Too much, maybe. Unfortunately, advertising is usually a little late to the party. Every time a new trend comes out, I really remember that strongly in 2012 when dubstep was the huge thing. And all of a sudden, well, 2 years after Skrillex put out this first song, then Mercedes used this a dubstep track, and Panasonic and so many other brands. And that happens over and over again. There was a track that's already a few years go as well. The Lumineers, everybody wanted to sound like that. Then there were Pumped Up Kicks, everybody wanted to sound like that, and was constantly sending us reference tracks like, make a little bit like more like that. So it happens over and over again. In advertising, we follow whatever the clients tell us. In Epic Trailer Music, we are fortunate that a lot of times we are asked to create something typically Zwei sounding. So that's actually the best thing that can happen, because that's where we feel happy and what we can do. So if they tell us to sound like us, that's kind of like a compliment for us.
But how guilty of trend following rather than trend setting are you? Do you ever see what's happening in the market and think, oh, we could go that direction?
It depends on the area of where we work. In advertising, we have to follow our clients' wishes. We kind of like contractors who do what we are told, so to speak. When it comes to sync, we really have to stay close to the zeitgeist, so to speak. So we have to see what is out there and maybe what will be out there in the next years, what will be a trend. And I remember that when we talk about epic cover trailers, that's still a huge thing and doesn't go away for some reason. But a few years ago, we started creating epic music combined with hip hop, because we had the feeling that this could be coming more strongly, and it did. So we were happy that we bet on the right horse there.
Earlier on, you mentioned that in the US, you have a company working with you called Position Music. Yeah. Is this a kind of placement agency, or what is that? And how did that even happen? Because I think that's a key point for some of the listeners to understand that you needed that kind of third party to help you.
Yes, that's definitely right. So when Christian came back to Hamburg, he came in 2015. He just co-composed Mad Max, which was a huge success, of course. It kind of opened us a lot of doors here. But we had the feeling that we didn't want to do feature films anymore because it's so time consuming and we had to be in LA. But we wanted to take the same sound set that was used for films and we're thinking of doing music for trailers. And there are a few big music companies out there. They're functioning as a publisher or as a sync agency. We sent our music to a couple of them. We sent to Immediate Music. They are in LA as well. We sent to Riptide Music, also LA. And then we sent to Position Music. There are a bunch more. Confidential Music is there. Fortunately, they all wanted to work with us. And then we picked Position Music because they gave us the freedom of creating our own brand as well. Often you don't really know who's the composer behind it. And we wanted recognizability for our artist name. And we created a full album. Position kind of gave us an advance for that. But we didn't have any client whatsoever. We didn't know if it's going to be synced once or not at all. And we had a deal with Position that they brought our music to the right people, to the trailer editors, to the music supervisors, to the producers of the big trailer houses, because that's something I had to learn as well. There are trailer houses who only specialize on creating trailers, and they are huge. There's one trailer park sitting on Hollywood Boulevard. There are, I think, over 200 people working there. And it's insane, and it has nothing to do with the film industry again. So there's no overlap again. And we were told that the first song that we created, a song called Catapult, might be used in a trailer, in a superhero trailer. And we were really stoked about that, but didn't really know anything. Then we went to the movies, because Christian is also my good friend, and we spent back then a lot of time, free time together, and the trailer started to roll, and we saw a Wonder Woman trailer with our music, and we flipped out. That was a real rockstar moment for us, like listening to the song first time in the radio, and we saw it on the screen. That was amazing. And that collaboration we're having with Position Music is still going really strong. We are non-exclusively signed with them, so we release what we want with them. But all the game stuff, or 99% of the game stuff, is just us and the direct clients. So Position isn't involved there. They get our whole publishing and they control our master. Yeah, it's a big chunk of our money, but it's equal, so to speak. We are very happy with their work, and we started with just us as the composers, and now we have a joint venture together where we present them other artists, as I mentioned, soul, hip-hop, pop, that we also produce and develop with them as a team. So we have our weekly call where we talk about all different projects and see how we can create sync opportunities for them.
I guess even being very successful already, that you would advise people to really get one of these companies on board and to go looking on a daily basis for work for
you. Yeah, well, depending on what you want. If you want to be a touring artist, a Position isn't probably the right match for you. Or if you want to be like an artist creating lots of Spotify streams and YouTube views, I'm not sure if they are the right match. If you're out for syncs and placements, they're 100% the right match. They have a bigger sync department than Atlantic Records. They are just really experts in that area. And it makes things easy for us because we go on networking events here for advertising, but we can't split ourselves and go on meetings to trailer editors and music supervisors in LA. So they cover that for us and get their fee for that.
Can we just have a look a little bit in a bit more detail about the process of actually landing a license deal or some music in a placement somewhere? And I've picked out a few examples that might be helpful of things that you've done that I particularly liked. There's an artist called Aurora from Norway that I've been a big fan of and worked with a little bit. I think you remixed one of her tracks for the Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, very recently, yeah.
Let's use that as an example, if we can, of how did that happen?
Yeah, so we were huge Aurora fans to begin with as well. At some point, EA approached us for all kinds of game trailers, and then Ubisoft approached us as well. And we've been working with Ubisoft for a while now, where we created, I don't know, maybe 10 trailers for Assassin's Creed in the past already, but also other games like Ghost Recon. We were asked by the music supervisor of Ubisoft if we were down to remix a song that's Aurora creating specifically for the 15th anniversary of Assassin's Creed. We received received stems from them, and they asked us to remix it in our typical Zwei style, as I mentioned earlier. And so that happened. Unfortunately, we weren't in touch with Aurora, but we were very honored to create the music for her. How does it happen that a music supervisor approaches you? I wouldn't know. Like, I think constantly create great work, go out there and, you know, mingle and talk to people, and don't be shy with your music. Just have people listen to it and be consistent and persistent, and eventually, hopefully, they approach you.
Excellent. And another from a TV ad, one of the BMW ads that you've done, I think it was the X1, where the car is driving down a road towards a lake or the sea.
Yeah, and I then think it's Outdoor Dreams.
A bridge kind of appears at the last second, and the car drives on the bridge. The music for that is sensational.
Oh, thank you.
I loved the ad.
Thanks.
I really liked it. It literally pulsates through the speakers. The rhythm is pulsating, right? And then, of course, the drop comes at the moment the car accelerates. Everything's perfect. It really
liked thank you. Thanks.
And it looks nice as well. But I couldn't help thinking that you'd sat down and said, we're going to compose some music for a car commercial. Do you do that? Was that an example of it? Or
that's more in the trailer world, where we kind of like imagine, okay, let's create an action trailer theme or something like that, and then have the people at position license it for a trailer. In advertising, advertisers approach you, hopefully, as I mentioned earlier, really early, so we don't do sound alikes. And they did, in this case, they did approach us quite early. The film wasn't even shot. Usually it starts with asking for an offer to create, an estimate to create the music. And I'm sure the listeners want to know how you come in that position of that they approach you. And I have to say, in advertising, it's really going out there and meeting people and doing lunches and creating parties and going to parties. And this specific job was created by a director called Mark Jenkinson. British guy, actually. And we've done work with him in the past that came through a very close friend of mine who is a freelance TV producer. I don't know what the commercial was, but he pushed us in as composers, and he loved our music and wanted to work with us again. And then he came with a BMW commercial, pitched us to the production company or the agency. They are called Media Monks. And we did an offer, and we agreed on some number, and then we started finding tracks. And that's this process that I mentioned earlier. We were looking through existing music of ours. We also sent a couple of tracks from Spotify just to give them variety. And lucky enough, they were really interested in music and didn't say, we want to have this track, please do the exact same track. But they said, hey, we love the beginning of this piece that you created, but it could be when the beat pulsates, it could have this vibe of this Spotify track as well, the track by this famous artist, whoever it was. And then in the end, it should have an uplifting ending, or should explode or whatever. And then we go in our studio here in Hamburg. We have 6 studios where different composers work, and I brief them and give them the little extra that I know from my experience, what they mean with, okay, it's got to be cool at the end, for instance. And they picked one of my favorite tracks that we delivered. Then it took literally months to have it done finally. So it looks really easy, or it sounds really easy, but there are so many people involved in the process.
Can you tell us who the people are?
Yes.
You know, do we have lawyers in there, managers, publishers? What's the chain, and who do you speak to, and who's talking behind you to other people?
In advertising, we usually get approached by either the director, the creative director from the agency, or a producer from the film production company. And usually we first have to please the director, because he's the one right at the beginning to working with us. But once the director is happy, we pitch it to the creative agency and the creative director. Then he can totally disagree with the director and can tell us something completely different. So we sometimes have to start from scratch again, or really change the track quite a bit. And if the creative director or the agency is happy, we have to present to the client that we usually don't talk to personally. Most of the times we talk to the director and the creative agency, but not to the marketing department. And within the marketing department, there are different hierarchies as well. So we don't necessarily talk to the CMO at the top, but maybe to the 4th level brand manager, who also has an opinion. So sometimes I feel like it's kind of like a world championship, where we start in the quarterfinals, then come to the semifinals, and eventually the finals.
Yeah, again, that echoes what Marcus Linder was saying in the podcast about everybody has an opinion about music, including the secretary of the head of marketing.
And coming back to what I like in music for game trailers, is we don't talk to the director, we don't talk to the creative director, we talk directly to the client. And they have an in-house creative team, and we usually agree on one direction, and then we don't do five layouts either. We just do one composition, fine-tune it, of course, and tweak it quite a bit, but always have time for that. So that's a beautiful thing.
And the financial side of it, I mean, there's of course a budget. You know that in advance. You know how much money you've got to spend on delivering this project.
In advertising, yes. In game trailers, yes. In the Hollywood trailer world, where we work with position music, it's always a surprise. We get a quarterly statements, and it's always like Christmas, ideally. So we just wait for a paycheck, so to speak. And then usually we just know then where our music was placed as well. Some of the times we have no idea where our music is used until we see our quarterly statements.
And do the budgets differ wildly, even within the ad sector?
They do differ wildly, I have to say. Sometimes we're afraid that we sell ourselves on a value, so we usually don't compose for less than 7,000-8,000 euros for a commercial, but it really depends on the usage. So if it's a worldwide commercial that's going to be aired in TV, online events for perpetuity, then there are sometimes, not often, but sometimes budgets in six figures as well. But that doesn't happen too often. Usually game trailers are always the same numbers roundabout, and usually always in the five figures, I want to say. And in Hollywood trailers or in the music that's getting licensed, it really differs from where was it used for, I don't know, a wedding video or Tomb Raider. So can be anything from $500 to, I think, $80,000, something like that.
Okay. Another recent project you did was for the Women's Euro Football Championship. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, what was that? That was to do with the
Volkswagen,
gender...
Volkswagen,
mm-hmm. Yeah, for a gender equality campaign.
You picked three very good examples because they're all really different. In that case, the budget was rather small and we decided not to compose for it because there was no money for it. So we went back to the archive and told them, okay, we can compose it. But would you be interested in looking into our music library that's easy accessible online, but we also do customized polls. So they give us a briefing and we search for tracks that we created, that we own, and give those tracks to them. And I think there were two different spots and they picked two different tracks they loved. We fine-tuned them and that was kind of easy. And if you ask how we got this job, it's also easy. This time, actually, one of the marketing executives at Volkswagen is a really close friend of mine that I usually go camping with once a year and get usually really drunk.
Okay, so that does help.
Sometimes, yeah.
We'll call that networking.
Yeah. No, I really don't want to call it networking. Okay. It's really creating valuable friendships, because I don't see him as a client. I generally see him as a friend who also gives me opportunities to work with him. But when I came to Hamburg, I think it's 11, 12 years ago, I didn't know anyone. I started at a very junior position in a music house, and I really just wanted to meet people and meet friends. And so I went out to so many different parties and met people who were juniors at creative agencies, who were interns, who just shot their first film as a director. And I just started hanging out with them. And they're still my close friends that I would possibly invite to my wedding. So it's not only business. It's really a mixture out of advertising and friendship, which I love in this industry. It's just the best. It's not, I don't have to dress up. I don't have to wear a suit to go to these events. I just come as I am and have fun as I am. And it doesn't matter if it's a private party or an official party. It's really good creative people. That's actually a thing I want to say I love about the advertising world.
We talked a little bit about the differences in budgets and in the different areas. What are the major differences are there? What are the main things in your head when you think of them?
So one really important difference between creating music for ads or game trailers compared to music for Hollywood trailers is that we get a picture, like a storyboard, an animatic, or a first offline edit, and compose music to it. In trailers, we create music and the editors edit their film to the existing music already. So it's the exact opposite, which is the main difference, I want to say.
I got a question from Hannes. He asks, on a scale from 1 to 10, how much knowledge and understanding of the music industry do people in the gaming industry have, and vice versa?
Depends on the clients. As we're working quite a lot with Riot Games, it's so incredibly what they do with all these artists. Now, they started working with Imagine Dragons, with Glitch Mob. We were fortunate to work with them. They have a huge own music department, actually, and are really eager of, you know, creating the best out of the music for their players. Same goes with EA and especially FIFA. I mean, having a track in FIFA, like we did once, is usually the holy grail for every musician. And they have a really great music department as well. Some other companies that I'm not saying any names, of course, now, they have no idea how to market music. And it's sometimes a little frustrated because it has so much potential. We're talking about games that are played 100 million times a week. And if you place your music there, they could benefit from it as well. It could just blow up so quickly. And sometimes they don't see the potential there. But yeah, I'm just, you know, navigating to companies like Riot Games, who are doing an incredible job. And if you as a game company want to work better with music, just do exactly what Riot Games is doing.
I've done some live events with Riot Games and League of Legends. And yeah, they know what they're doing in every field, really. Yeah. Okay, so there's no real scale 1 to 10. Some companies are close to 10 out of 10.
Yes.
Some are lower down. So let's say 5 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We talked about this idea of educating clients and trying to bring more people into one room around one table to try to hammer out and identify some of the areas where things could perhaps be smoother or better. European Sync, a key part of this is the academy, where they'll be organizing regular workshops at different events, at advertising events, at music events, at film events, where this could happen, where people will start to mingle with each other and come up with new ways of working. How could this work practically on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I know that European Sync starts doing events as well, right? With other companies together, and companies that are more in the music industry or in the advertising industry. So I think that's a very smart move. So collaborating is always a great thing of connecting people. And if that's something that European Sync could do more, I think you would definitely benefit from it. Of course, it's a question of costs as well. I do think doing podcasts like this is just a genius way of, you know, learning and also getting to know other people and other insights. So I think you guys are doing a couple of great things already.
Right. Very good. That was lovely, the story you told about hearing your music on the cinema screen. I mean, what a way to,
that was
to find out. I mean, because one of my questions was, how does it feel when you land that thing you've been aiming for?
It still feels great. We just landed a big commercial with an indie house artist that we didn't expect. So it still feels amazing. I think we're a little bit spoiled. So I remember the first time we actually won a pitch for whatever commercial for Nivea, we freaked out. We were so, so happy. And we're trying to remind us and keep that energy and that hype going. And we have a huge gong in our studio. So whenever we win a pitch, we hit that gong and celebrate. Everybody's coming out of the studios and yelling and cheering. So we really want to keep that energy going. For us right now, I feel really satisfied if we can enable things to our community and our artists that we are working with. Because some of them, especially through Corona, some of them were struggling so hard, and giving them the opportunity to still make a living out of music, that's giving back so much to me, and usually even better than us winning a job or a sync. It's just great to see other people succeed. It's
wonderful. Great. You mentioned that you're bored now with being successful at the all the TV ads and the film trailers.
Not bored. We're a little spoiled.
Okay. But you're starting to branch into another area, which is the live business, which is very interesting.
Yes. We are at the very beginning. We just partnered up with a booking company that believes in our concept and wants to help us getting on the stage. And we have a date next year, May 25th in Berlin. So please come, because the venue is way too big for us. But what we're going to do is, we were inspired by Hans Zimmer, where Christian worked for quite some time, and we watched him live earlier this year. And we were thinking, well, what he's doing, it's cool, but we can do it. I don't want to say better, but we can do it differently. And
Zwei style.
Yeah, Zwei style. We won't have 50, 60 people on stage. We're going to have a small ensemble, maybe five, six strings, a couple of drums, our singers who sing our cover songs, a couple of them, backing choir, Christian and me are going to be on stage. So it might be like a group of 13, 14 people. And we will perform all of our big epic trailer songs. So from Warriors to Survivor to Toxic, everything's going to be in there. Not only covers, we're also going to perform the songs that we wrote ourselves with Marvin Brooks and Etta Hayes, for instance. And right now we're in the preparation of getting everything together. And hopefully a lot of people show up, because it depends on if we're going to do a tour after that. But we're really, really excited. And yeah, that's definitely not boring. That's just scary.
Well, good luck getting into the live business. So watch out for that, everybody. Come into an arena near you soon.
Yeah, for now just Berlin.
But that's wonderful. Thanks ever so much, Simon. It's been a great insight into what you do. I think the listeners are going to be fascinated. Very interesting, and great that you're so successful. It's lovely to talk with someone who knows what they're doing. Great.
Thanks so much.